Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I can't waste any time. Let me get right to the Rams and Raiders. Rams v. Raiders, the return of John Gruden, the trade of Khalil Mack, the debut of the Rams' dream team. There were so many Chucky dolls in the stands, so many storylines on the sidelines, you knew something had to give. Something was going to go down last night, and it did. In the first quarter, on the very first drive of the Raiders' season, I give to you Marshawn Lynch v. the Rams' defense.
Derek Carr moves up now to change the call. Now he backs away from the offensive line. Marshawn is off to his left. Draw. Marshawn. Six. Cuts back to the three. Battley. Close to the two-yard line. It took a half dozen. He goes into the end zone. He's pushed in. Touchdown. Oh, my. The beast is unstoppable.
Video. Holy crap. Marshawn Lynch. He's had more legendary runs than that one, but I'm not sure he's ever had one that was more powerful. This guy put the team on his back. The Rams team. Every guy in Rams gear was either trying to pull him down or jumping on top of him, and every single one of them was just along for the ride. It does not get any more impressive than that. The beast mode. Beast freaking mode. He looked like beast mode of old. He looked like he was back. And you know Chuck Gruden was fired up for the first drive of the season. Chucky appeared to be out-scheming Wade Phillips in that Rams all-world defense. And when you do that, you know you're feeling yourself. You know Chuck was. Gruden had put his reputation on the line by trading Khalil Mack. You know he wanted to make a statement. You know he wanted to make it clear. Well, he did make it clear that he couldn't keep both Derek Carr and Khalil Mack. Even though he could have, he wanted you to know that he could not have. But he wanted to make sure that everybody knew that he made the right choice, that Gruden kept the right guy. And after that first drive, it looked like that was an argument that he might even win. Again, Chuck Gruden was looking to send messages and make statements. And Marshawn Lynch made one on that first drive. Problem is, the Rams made a statement of their own, and they made it in the second half. In fact, they made it the entire second half, and a close game turned into a hospital job. Oakland went into halftime leading 13-10, and it started to seem like maybe stockpiling big names and bigger contracts might not be the best idea. Maybe all these stars on the Rams were not going to gel. Maybe dream teams don't work in the NFL. Hell, maybe the Raiders really are not going to miss Khalil Mack. Wrong answer. Because the Rams came out in the second half. Not only knocked the rust off, they knocked the Raiders the hell out. Jared Goff, Todd Gurley got rolling. The Rams dropped 23 unanswered points on Chuck and his crew, and it was capped off by this.
Second down and four. Could be the final play before the two-minute warning, and it's intercepted. Marcus Peters in his hometown, a pick six to say goodnight. He goes leaping into the end zone, lands on his back. A pick six to cap it for L.A.
Rams radio. And that was not just a Marcus Peters pick six. That was a Marcus Peters pick six, complete with a crotch grab leap after he went into the end zone. Doing the beast mode in beast mode's house is an embarrassing look for Chuck and the silver and black and for the beast mode. So much for statements, eh, Chuck? Exactly what the hell happened? You come in with the crazy hype, the crazy fanfare, the crazy contract. You run off your best player, and then you get run right off your home field. Under the lights, in prime time, with the entire nation watching. Chuck, what do you have to say for yourself?
You know, when you can run the ball like they ran in the second half, it's very hard to rush the passer. Obviously, we didn't get to Goff enough, and we didn't get to Gurley enough. And we'll take a good look at the reasons why we didn't.
You do that, Chuck. You do that. But I've got one reason why you were not able to rush the passer last night. You traded your best pass rusher. Oh, and he happens to be a pretty damn good run stopper as well. Your best pass rusher and run stopper was playing Sunday night in Bears gear and reminded the entire world of what you just traded. And then you went and reminded everybody of it all over again. Chris Johnson, you remember him, old CJ2K, he tweeted, quote, traded Mac and can't get to the quarterback, followed by four face palm emojis. And the guy's right. And speaking of reminding everybody about that Mac trade, how about this quote from Gruden from an interview that aired before the game?
Obviously, Khalil Mack didn't want to play here. You know, that's what's being missed here. He was under contract, Lisa. You know, he was under contract. He never showed up for an OTA. He never showed up for training camp. And it was obvious he wasn't going to show up for the season. So, you know, don't forget that. We have to get ready to play. And I want players that want to be here, that want to help us put this thing back in high gear.
ESPN, with that. I mean, what the hell are you talking about? What are you talking about? You're blaming the Khalil Mack trade on Khalil Mack. He didn't ask to be traded. He asked to be paid his fair market value, and the Bears were willing to give it to him, and you were not. What do you mean he didn't want to be there? He loved it there. He made it clear he wanted to be a Raider for life. Of course he wanted to be there. You didn't want him there, so you traded him. Fine. Own it. But don't come in here after getting punched in the face and say that the player did not want to be there when he clearly did. Mac did not make that decision, Chuck. You did. You need to own that and stop blaming the player. Hey, Raider fan, see, this is how this is going to go. This is what you get when you give a guy like that much money and that much power. What you get are bad decisions and no accountability. Good luck getting Chuck to own anything at all in the next decade, Raider fan. I've got another concern for you. Now, you know this here is a huge Derek Carr house. Huge Derek Carr house. I love the guy. And the guy was lights out in 2015 and 2016. However, he has not really been the same player since then. Now, I understand this. I get it. He had a busted leg. He had a busted back. We've seen what Derek Carr can do when he's right. But he really hasn't been since 2016. And this is one of the reasons why you bring Chucky in. Because Chuck is an alleged quarterback guru. He can fix Carr. Except Derek Carr didn't look any better last night than he did last season. And if Carr does not get back to playing the way he did, then the Raiders have no shot. And you can tell yourself it's only one game, but the fact is, it's not. It's not. He hasn't been right since 2016. My man looks like he's lost some of that mojo and some of that swag. And once it goes, it does not always come back. Now, I'm not giving up on Carr. But know this, Chuck better coach him up. Chuck says one of the reasons he took that job was for Derek Carr. This is another reason why they're paying this guy $10 mil a year. I'm not saying your season is over, Raider fan. You got beat by a better team. You got outclassed and you got outcoached and the entire world saw it. Yes, it's only one game. However, I had my concerns about Chuck going into that one game. And now I've got even more of them coming out of that one game. Concerns about the decisions he makes. Concerns about whether or not this guy's ever going to own anything at all. And based on what I saw last night, the answer is no, he's not. For him to come out and say that Khalil Mack didn't want to be there, that he wasn't there in camp, and that tells you he didn't want to be there. I don't know, Aaron Donald wasn't there in camp. Does that mean he didn't want to be a Ram? No, of course not. Ty Montgomery. Ty, it's great to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
Good, good, Ty. Listen, before we start about that amazing come-from-behind win, let's talk about, for those who have never played, well, all of us, but for those who have never played in a Packers-Bears rivalry game, how would you describe that rivalry? I mean, obviously, you're fired up to play in every single game, but how much more juice is there when it's the Packers and the Bears?
I mean, the energy is crazy. Obviously, there's a lot of history there, and the rivalry is huge. But the energy in the stadium is just it's insane, and it's a lot of fun.
We're talking to Ty Montgomery. So, Ty, the game obviously doesn't get off to the start that you would have liked. You fall behind early on. Aaron Rodgers gets hurt. What was going through your mind when you saw your quarterback go down?
Oh, it was looking pretty grim early in the game. but you know, I never lost faith in our team and. And what we are able to accomplish, and then you know when Aaron went down, you know I think a switch just flipped of like you know we got to win this football game, you know whether we have him or not. Obviously he makes us better as a football team, you know, we can't get down on ourselves or count ourselves out just because we don't have him back there.
It's how you know that, and you're conditioned to know that, and you train for that. But when you see a guy like that who means that much to that team, really that much to the entire state, that region of the country, when you see a guy like that go down, how do you maintain that focus? And did you feel some of the energy leave the stadium when it happened?
You know, I'm not going to lie. You could definitely feel some of the energy leave the stadium. But the good thing about this football team is we all believe in one another and in one another's abilities. And we all understand that we have a job to do, no matter who's playing quarterback. You know, obviously we all want it to be Aaron all the time. But, you know, when something like that happens, like it did on Sunday, you know, we're all grown men and we're all prepared to get our job done at the end of the day.
We're talking to Ty Montgomery. So when he comes jogging out of the tunnel, what's your reaction to that? And did you feel the energy in the stadium change at that point?
Oh, man, I did. You know, this is just a joke that I have in my head. You know, me and a couple of teammates were talking about it. And, you know, I'm a big guy, and it just kind of felt like, you know, how Jesus was walking out of the tunnel, changed back up, and within the third quarter, he rose again, just, you know, resurrected this football team, this football game, this stadium. It was crazy.
That's a great analogy right there. Ty Montgomery joining us. You know, Ty, when you lay it out like that, something else you've said when you talk about Aaron Rodgers is that he's godlike with a lowercase g. And I want to be very clear about this. You're not saying that he's God, but you're saying that he's got a really clear sense of himself, who he is, what he's capable of. And that nothing ever shakes this guy off his plan when he's determined to get something or do something. It's really high praise coming from you, and something I know that you do not throw around lightly. As a leader of that team yourself, how much does that sense of identity and control spread throughout the rest of the team?
Not to try to make too many jokes here, but you know, it's contagious. You know, what he's able to do, and his aura, his personality, and you know, everything about him in that way is just contagious, and it makes everyone else, you know, I know me personally, it makes me want to get a handle on myself and on things like that. You know, practice, game days, you know, all the time, you know, even in my everyday life.
Green Bay Packer Ty Montgomery joining us. You know, the win, you don't win that game without Aaron Rodgers, but we're talking about a whole team effort here. What's it say about the mental toughness of the entire team that when you were down 20-0, you didn't give up hope, you didn't fold, and you found a way to get this thing done? And in fact, you did it despite trailing by 17 going into the fourth quarter. There is Aaron, but what's it say about the other 52 guys?
Yeah, you know, I think that says that we have a resilient football team. You know, we have a we're very strong-willed as a football team, and you know, we take a lot of pride in getting our job done and doing everything we can to get a win. Because at the end of the day, that's what matters. It's about the team as a whole and our one common goal.
Ty Montgomery, my guest. I appreciate your thoughts on that, Ty. Listen, not to get too personal, but you and your wife had a son in the offseason over the summer. You talked about the moment where you first held him and you felt life in him. You know, for those who have been through this, we certainly know exactly what you're talking about. But can you put into words what it felt like for you?
You know, it's tough. You know, I'm not a man that really gets that really cries too much. But you know, I tear up sometimes just when I'm looking at him, and the first time I held him and I felt that life in him and I could see it in him. And just seeing him, you know, every day, seeing him with my wife, is showing me that, you know, I'm capable of doing things that I didn't know that I was capable of before. And I'm capable of giving out amounts of love that I didn't even know I was capable of giving out. And I'm starting to learn how to love myself in ways that I didn't know I could. And, you know, loving myself, my son, my wife, and everyone around me.
Ty Montgomery, my guest. That's really powerful. You know, something else you've talked about, the fact that when you're an adult and you're surrounded by adults, you don't see people do things for the first time anymore, right? But now you're going to be around your son, your child, and you're going to see firsts all the time. How excited are you about that, and what's that like?
I'm super excited. You know, one of the things I talked about when I first had him was how you know, I think time is gonna feel different to me, because I'm gonna be able to physically see it. You know, as human beings, we get so caught up in ourselves that, you know, time kind of passes right by and we don't even realize, you know, we look up and we're like, oh, where did the time go? You know, even when we're trying to enjoy the moment and live in the moment, as, you know, that kind of seems to be, you know, the wave that people are jumping on right now. But now with my son, I'm actually seeing it, and I'm seeing first, you know, he's trying to talk more. He's finding his voice. His personality is showing. He's smiling. He's tracking me and following me with his eyes around the room. And, you know, he's kicking more. And it's just every little thing. And it's just like, wow, you know, so much is happening in the first 3 months of his life. And it's just, you know, it's amazing.
Ty, what's amazing to me is that you have this perspective and you see it like this. All right, I remember when I was in your position and we had our first child and I was kind of blown away by the whole thing and I thought that I was in the moment, but certainly not the way you are right now. Where is this coming from? I mean, have you always been like this? Did you go through something like this? I'm amazed that you're as locked in and focused, especially given your lifestyle and the job that you have, that you're as dialed in as you are with your child. Where does that come from?
You know, I don't really know. I guess it's just innate. It's just in me. It's part of my nature. You know, I had a lot of guys ask me, you know, is it tough? Is it hard? You know, is it a big change? Is it a big difference? And, you know, honestly, if, like I said, it feels natural. It feels like I was designed for this, like I was built for this. And I just, you know, I didn't run from it. You know, I didn't try to hide from it. And, you know, I'm just going to try to be the very best father and husband that I can be.
Ty Montgomery, my guest. You know, you had a pair of receptions in Sunday's win, and you're donating $88 per reception this season to help fund your foster teen program. We've talked about your commitment to supporting kids in foster programs in the past. So what in particular are you looking to do with your foster teen program?
So we're currently in Green Bay right now, and we're partnering with Life Church with Pastor Sean Hennessy and Sonny Hennessy. And we're basically providing some life skills and social skills for these foster teens before they age out of foster care, and trying to, you know, give them a leg up on adulthood. Once these kids age out of foster care, they're kind of on their own, and a lot of them end up homeless or in situations that are, you know, the best way I can say it is just less than ideal for sure. So we're going to do everything we can to just give these kids some life skills, how to deal with their traumas. You know, a lot of them are arrested in development. A lot of us are, you know, in general. But, you know, arrested in development is huge, and we don't know how to deal with the traumas that have occurred in our life. You know, teaching them some financial basics that they need to know. Also some social skills, job prep, and possibly helping these kids get into college as well. And, you know, we want to be able to get these kids a free car with some insurance so that they can get to and from wherever they need to, where there's job interviews. And they also, you know, do what we can to help them find a place to live. And just basically help them, you know, just basically get started.
Good for you. Ty Montgomery, my guest. If people want to get involved, how would they go about doing so?
Yeah, they can go to Pledge It. I posted all over my social media. I don't remember the link exactly. I know some people would be mad at me because I'm terrible at this. But they can go to Pledge It, and they can decide to pledge a certain amount per reception with me. They can also go to on the Pledge It website. There is the My 10% website, which has the Accelerate program and a link there. And they can also go to that website and donate as well.
It's a great cause. Ty, one last thought. You are a Stanford man. You went to high school in Dallas. I'm curious, though, in Wisconsin, for instance, I grew up in Los Angeles. I'm a California native. My family took a vacation to Wisconsin a few weeks back, and we still haven't stopped talking about it. We had so much fun. Could not have loved the area any more than we did. We were there a week. What's it been like for you? I mean, I know you're doing business. You're there to play some football. But what do you make of the state and living there most part of the year?
You know, I honestly love it. I haven't left since I've been drafted. I moved up here once I got drafted, and people are like, what, really, Green Bay, Wisconsin? You know, it's crazy. What is there to do out there? And I was like, exactly. You know, there's not really very many distractions. There's not a lot of places to spend my money. It's a family-oriented town. It's a small, you know, close-knit community. My wife and I, we have friends outside of the team that are, you know, born and raised in Wisconsin and also in Green Bay. And, you know, we just love it. We love the summers and the falls. It's beautiful out here. There's a lot of golf courses. I love to play golf. A lot of people love to fish. There's outdoorsy things to do. And, you know, the winners, they are what they are. You get used to them, and, you know, you learn to spend time with your family, spend time indoors, and you just play a lot of games and do a lot of things with friends and family.
All right, so if Rams Raiders was the main course, then Jets Lions was the so-called appetizer. What that was a sampler platter of misery if you're a Lions fan. The 2018 Detroit Lions opened up the season with a tribute to Aretha Franklin, and then they played some of their own greatest hits. Interceptions, injuries, horrible tackling, missed field goals, and allowing a special teams touchdown, and that was just the start. But here's the thing. The actual start of the game, of course, could not have gone any better for the Lions or any worse for Sam Darnold and the Jets. First play of Sam Darnold's career, roll it.
And there is the play action fake and the bootleg right for Sam Darnold. Looks back to the left, fires one left sideline, and it's intercepted. Picked off down the sideline, heading towards the end zone, and into the end zone with a touchdown is Quandre Diggs. The first pass attempt of the career of Sam Darnold is a long across-the-field lob that you can't make in the National Football League. You may be able to do that in the Pac-12, but that's the learning experience for Sam Darnold.
Jets radio. Actually, you can't even do that in the Pac-12. You can't do that in high school. You can't do that anywhere. That's the first thing they tell you when you play football. Do not do that. I mean, aside from a career-ending or season-ending injury, that was about the worst possible outcome. The worst way to start a career. A pick six on your very first throw. You could not even write that off as a good play by the defense. That was the most rookie quarterback throw you are ever going to see. Rolling right, trying to throw back across your left. It's a throw that you're told not to make, even in Pop Warner. And Sam Darnold just did it in the NFL. And then, of course, instantly, everybody rushes in to kill him. Everybody rushed to Twitter to clown him and clown the Jets. You know, J-E-T-S, M-E-S-S, mess, mess, mess. J-E-T-S, C-R-A-P, crap, crap, crap. Here we go again. Sam Darnold is the new Christian Hackenberg. Kellen Clemens, Brooks Bollinger, Broadway Browning Nagel. Except that's not how that was, because Sam Darnold is not any of those guys. And I could not have been any more impressed than I was with Sam Darnold last night, because he bounced back in a huge way. Think about it. He starts the game like that, on the road, in prime time. All the heat, all the expectations, people rushing in to kill him, and then he completely turns it around. Just flip the switch. Completes 7 of his next 9. Leads the Jets to points in 3 of his next 5 drives, including a 41-yard touchdown pass to Robbie Anderson. Do you have any idea how hard that is to do? Even if it is against the Lions, because he's still playing with the Jets. It's not like he's throwing to Jerry Rice or Randy Moss. And even when Detroit tied that game early in the second half, Darnold came right back with another TD pass. And then in the process, he becomes the first rookie QB to win his first NFL start by 31 points since Tom Brady. Now, let's not freak out. It is only one game. I'm not here to crown his ass or declare the guy's a Hall of Famer yet. Just like, however, I was not looking to crucify him after only one play. But man, my dude is impressive. Really impressive. I mean, so poised, so composed in a situation where it would have been so easy to melt down and implode. And while the numbers are not the same, Sam Darnold last night reminded me of the Sam Darnold that we saw in the Rose Bowl. The composure, the calm. This guy's a freaking flatline. He doesn't have a pulse. He's one of the coolest dudes ever. This is why everybody here in SoCal love this guy and why the Jets moved Teddy Bridgewater and gave Darnold the rock to start the season. I mean, listen to the guy himself explain the pick six.
On that interception, I was pretty nervous. I'm not going to lie to you guys. But after that, you know, put it behind me. I think, you know, that after the crowd got really loud after that pick, it was just, you know, oh, shoot. And then I was like, okay, here we go. You know, can't get much worse than that. So it was really that kind of thinking that was going on in my head. And then just, you know, played and knew that we had a good team.
Love this dude. I've loved this dude since the first time I saw him play. Love his attitude, love his poise, love his composure, loves the way he carries himself. He's got no bag about him. I mean, totally grounded guy, normal guy. Teammates love him. Everybody loves Darnold. Everybody. Now, it's too early for me to say that the Jets have a good team. Too early for that just yet. But, man, I like this guy's confidence. And I do like the way they were flying around to the football. Oh, and here's another thing. Just as John Gruden is going to have to wear that Khalil Mack trade, the Giants apparently are going to have to wear the fact that they passed on Sam Darnold. I love Saquon Barkley. But maybe they're going to have to wear that too. And that could be really painful. I got to admit, when they took Barkley, I didn't look back. And I've always loved Darnold. But to see Darnold out there slinging it the way he was, to see him respond to adversity the way he did on that big stage, I'm telling you, that's something the Giants may wear for a long, long time. And as long as we are on the topic, the really painful topic of the Detroit Lions, Detroit, I wish I had better news for you. Let me be careful how I put this. That was disgusting. That was embarrassing. That was revolting. Even for you. S-O-L, same old Lions. That was so bad. The Jets defense knew what the Lions offense was running before they ran it. Linebacker Darren Lee said, quote, "We were calling out their plays as he was getting up to the line." I mean, that's some high school stuff right there. That is the ultimate humiliation. Or then again, is it? Because getting booed by your home fans in the season opener is pretty humiliating. And so is the fact that by the fourth quarter, you could only hear Jets fans. Or the fact that ESPN cut away from that game midway through the fourth because it was that embarrassing. Again, the game could not have started any better for the Lions or ended any worse. And I wish I could give you Lions fans a nice pep talk or some sort of silver lining. Except I don't see one. I don't think there is one. That was horrible, and you know it even more than I know it. And your rocket scientist coach looks like he just came from a keg party. Good luck with that. You're going to need it, and you know it.
That's unbelievable.
That really is unbelievable. Bucky Brooks is my guest. Bucky, it's great to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Jeff.
It's good to have you, Bucky. All right, so last week I thought you wrote a really good piece for NFL.com, and as part of it, you made the point about the pressure and how it's going to ramp up for Derek Carr because of the Khalil Mack trade. Can you lay that out for those who didn't see it? What do you mean by that?
When John Gruden, his comments right after trading Khalil Mack, he talked about how it is hard to pay two big-time guys. It's hard to have two $20 million-plus guys on a team. And so he was like, look, we got a quarterback. The quarterback's at $25 million. So that means that we can't have another guy. So when he said that, he basically said that this is Derek Carr's team. Derek Carr is being paid as the best player on our squad. And so my interpretation is if you want to do the best player and the best player is the quarterback, he is supposed to make everything right. And so when you look at the way the Raiders are constructed and the way the Raiders are going about building their team in the John Gruden era, Derek Carr has to be the guy that is always fixing all the other stuff. If the defense isn't right, Derek Carr has to get the offense playing at a level where it becomes shootouts and they can outscore people. If he doesn't have enough wide receivers, he doesn't have a marquee guy, then he has to be able to get the ball to those other playmakers and elevate their games. And so now, with everyone knowing that Derek Carr is a $25 million man, he has to play at an MVP level or the entire team building process is a failure under John Gruden.
Bucky Brooks joining us. All right, so Bucky, having said all that, and you saw him last night, his first game with John Gruden, and you've seen Derek Carr the last couple of years. I mean, last night they got off to a great start. They had that nice opening drive. Carr was really effective in hooking up with tight end Jared Cook, but he also threw three picks, and they end up getting blown out. This argument that you make for Derek Carr, or at least the argument that John Gruden's making for him, can he back all of that up? Is he the same player that he was?
You know, look, he played at an MVP level a couple of seasons ago. But the great thing about the elite quarterbacks, the guys that we talk about in the special VIP circle, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, you talk about Drew Brees and some of those guys do it year after year after year. Derek Carr fell back a little bit last year. Part of that was due to his injury. So we're waiting to see if what we saw two seasons ago was him, if that was just a guy being really, really hot. So I don't know. When I look at the way this team played and they performed last night, he certainly didn't look like he could necessarily shoulder the weight of the world, the weight of the offensive load all by himself. But This is the first game he and Gruden were together in regular season play. Let's see how Gruden is able to kind of cater this offense to really attenuate what Derek Carr does really well. But, yeah, right now, it has to be him playing at an MVP level for the Raiders to win week in, week out.
Bucky Brooks joining us. All right, so in the other Monday night matchup, you had Sam Darnold and his night. Bucky could not have gotten off to a worse start with that pick six on the first play of the game. But this guy bounces right back. He keeps his composure. I understand that he is far from a finished product, but you talked about it in the preseason and how you felt there was something definitely there with him. If you're Todd Bowles and you're the Jets, how are you feeling about your starting quarterback right now?
I think if you're Todd Bowles and the Jets brass, I think you feel good about not only your starting quarterback, but I think you feel good about the way that you started to build this team. Sam Darnold is going to be an outstanding player. I think what we saw from him last night was everything that people liked about him. The poise, the composure, the confidence, the resiliency, the bounce back from a pick six on his first throw to continue to play at a high level. But I think the bigger picture thing was, that defense looks like a top 10, maybe a top 5 defense. The guys that they brought in over the last 3 or 4 years, Leonard Williams, the Darren Lees, Marcus May, Jamal Adams, bringing over free agents Trumaine Johnson and Mo Claiborne. That defense looks like they may be good enough to keep them close. And then with Sam Darnold being the playmaker that he has been during his time at SC, he could be just enough to get them over the top. I think if you're a Jets fan, you're excited about the progress and what they're building in that building.
Bucky Brooks, my guest. All right, so I had Ty Montgomery, Bucky, on the show last hour. We were talking about the Packers' comeback and the impact of Aaron Rodgers. As I was watching that, I felt like unless the Bears scored a TD to go up by 2 scores late, that Rodgers was going to beat them. In hindsight, is there an argument, crazy as it sounds, that Chicago should have tried to convert on fourth down instead of kicking that field goal to go up by 6?
Oh, there's definitely an argument to be made. I was there. I was in the building. It was Packers alumni weekend, so a bunch of former players were there. We were sitting in the suite. And at that point, when it's fourth down and a couple yards to go, we're saying the game is on the line. Like, you could get the sense in the stadium that if number 12 got the ball back, he was going to find a way to win. And so right there, Matt Nagy had the choice and decision to, hey, we can win the game right now, control our own fate, or we can kick the field goal, give the ball back to number 12, and see if our defense is good enough. At the end, you saw that number 12 was a dragon slayer. He cut them down. He made a spectacular play, hit Randall Cobb. Randall Cobb did a great job of running and finishing the deal. But anytime you have a chance to knock a team out, you have to knock them out, especially when they have one of those marquee quarterbacks in the fold. You can't allow Aaron Rodgers to have another chance to beat you because he's shown time and time again that he can get it done.
Hey, Bucky, listen, you're not going to be awed by anything. It's just business to you. You spent more than a decade in the NFL as a player and a scout. But, man, what was it like to be in that building and in that suite with some other former Packers? And who were some of the guys you were chopping it up with up there?
No, so it's crazy. It was the 100th anniversary of the Green Bay Packers. So you have guys from the 50s, 60s, 70s, people who have just been longtime Packers at the end of Jerry Kramer was there. Paul Hornung was in the building. Guy David Robinson, Hall of Famer, was there. Then you had some of the more recent guys, Leroy Butler, on to Nick Barnett and some of those guys. So to sit there and to be amongst, I mean, you talk about guys that are the greatest guys within an annals of NFL history. It was terrific. And anytime you have an opportunity to be in Lambeau, you just understand the history behind the greatness of the Packers. It was terrific to be there, but then to also see an all-time performance from Aaron Rodgers, a guy who certainly will be another all-time great.
Man, I love that story. But my favorite part of that story, Bucky, is the first guy you mentioned was Jerry Kramer, who's one of my favorite, literally one of my favorite athletes ever. That's a man's man right there. How cool and how much respect do you have for Jerry Kramer?
Man, everyone who's ever been associated with the Packers has the utmost respect for Jerry Kramer. At halftime, they introduced all the players that were in attendance. He obviously was the last one to go. And to hear the rousing standing ovation for him. Packer fans are some of the most loyal fans that you will find. They were hanging on their seats, making sure that he finally got his just due as a Hall of Fame inductee. And so to be there, to hear that, to witness the ovation, to see his name up in the Ring of Honor and all of those things, just brings you back to the greatness of the Green Bay Packers and all the championships that have been won in Titletown.
Bucky Brooks joining us. That's great. Listen, before you go, I know you and Daniel were talking up the Chiefs and Andy Reid on your podcast. Let me ask you about Tyreek Hill. If you're scheming for the Chiefs offense, how do you go about dealing with Tyreek Hill?
You know, it's tough because Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy do a great job of putting him in positions to make plays and to touch the ball. And I think the one thing that you started to see, if you looked at football on Sunday, Tyreek Hill started getting touches on what we call fly sweeps, meaning the wide receiver starts out wide, he comes in motion real quick in front of the quarterback. Pat Mahomes did a little toss to him. He went around the corner. He did that a couple of times and had success. When you have someone as fast and as explosive as Tyreek Hill, to be able to get him the ball in a number of ways, be it fly sweeps, bubble screens, quick slants, it is hard to defend every inch of the field. Tyreek Hill is going to be a major impact player. I think Andy Reid has discovered his Kansas City version of DeSean Jackson, and we've seen how explosive DeSean Jackson has been throughout his career. Andy Reid has another guy that he can turn loose and unleash on the league like that.
Hey, last thought, kind of a sidebar. I love Andy Reid. I don't play favorites, but I love Andy Reid. But you mentioned another one of my favorite guys, Eric Bieniemy. I loved him when he was in Colorado. I loved talking to him when he was in the NFL. He's kind of had this attitude, man, this swagger. He was such a tough, tough dude. What do you make of him as a coach? How is he doing as an assistant, and where is he at, like, professionally? And what kind of upside does he have?
I think he has a lot of upside. I think a lot of what would be lost in dealing with Eric Bieniemy is he is the offensive coordinator in Kansas City.
Right.
And I know Andy Reid will always get credit because that's his offense, but being the offensive coordinator has been a nice launching point for guys like Doug Peterson. We saw Matt Nagy get the gig after calling plays for about 6 weeks. If Eric Bieniemy can show and can get the credit for some of the creativity that we're seeing for the Kansas City Chiefs, there's no reason why he shouldn't be a head coach in the league. He is really good when it comes to the football aptitude, the X and O's, but he's also really good to motivating, relating, and dealing with the players. He kind of checks off all the boxes. He just has to do a great job in his current capacity to get that opportunity at the highest level.
Exactly why I asked the question, because we know about Andy Reid's coaching tree. It's been amazing what the guys who have come through there, what they've accomplished. And I know Eric Bieniemy, you know he can motivate. You know he can motivate. So to your point, Bucky, if he gets the credit for being a guy that helped design, if not design, but can scheme and X know the way he can, I would love to see him get that opportunity. Bucky Brooks, NFL Network analyst, joining us on the program. Bucky, could not get to everything as always, but so good to have you on the show, man. I always look forward to that. Thank you very much for doing it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on you.
It was 17 years ago today, on a Tuesday, that the United States was attacked. 17 years can feel like a really long time, and it is. Some of you listening right now had not even been born yet, but for many of you like me, the mere mention of that date brings back the emotions of that day. You could probably remember exactly where you were. In fact, I know. You could remember exactly where you were that day and how you felt when you first heard that news. So I do want to say my thoughts right now are with those who lost friends, those who lost family members, those who lost loved ones on that day or in the days that followed. I'm also thinking of those whose lives were forever changed by what happened on that otherwise ordinary Tuesday morning in September. And again, I'm sending my gratitude to those who enlisted, re-enlisted, or stayed on, some of whom made the ultimate sacrifice. It was 7 years ago that the great John Thompson came on this show, and he talked about what that day meant to him. It's a story that many of you know and have heard, but also a story that many of you do not know. It's a story that I think about quite a bit, and I want to share it once again today.
Let me try to go back, because I've been telling this thing for 10 years. Right at the time of 9/11, Jim, some of my people were talking with a representative of your staff who wanted me to come on the show. The young man who my representative was talking to was trying to get me to travel on the 12th to L.A. Well, I said, no, I didn't want to travel. And I told my representative, I said, no, I'm not going to go. I will only go if I can go on the 11th because I want to be in Vegas on the 12th story. The young man called back to the office a few days before all of this happened and said, listen, he wasn't able to get the studio or whatever he was trying to accomplish with me, Jim, and wanted to know whether I would come on the 12th. Well, back in those days, I didn't compromise hardly anything, you know, and what happened is that I told my people, I said, well, let me talk to this boy because I'm not going to go. You know, I said, if I can't go on the 11th, I'm not going to go. By then, we had made the reservations and everything. Okay, so I talked to a young man. The guy was very pleasant, and he and I went back and forth and talking. And it wasn't hostile. But anyway, what he finally said to me is, he said, Coach, he said, if you promise me that you'll come on the 12th, I will get you back to Vegas immediately after we do the taping, he said, and I will make certain that you get there in time for whatever you're trying to get done. And I'm sitting there, I'm saying to myself, oh, hell, I don't want to do this. And the guy was nice. I mean, he was persuasive. He wasn't hostile with me. So I said, okay, son, I'll do it. I said, I'll come on the 12th. Now, if he had not have tried to been persistent with me, I would have insisted that I stay and get on that plane on the 11th. Well, a little while after we all were reacting to the Pentagon getting hit, and she said, John, she said, look at your itinerary. I said, yeah, no, I'm supposed to go on the 12th. She said, no, look at your itinerary. You were supposed to go on that plane. She said, that plane was the plane you were booked on. If that kid hadn't have talked you out of it, you would have been on that plane. So, you know, and making a shortcut around the whole story, I've been a Jim Rohn fan. Anybody talk about Jim Rohn, I'm whipping their ass. I'm going to tell you that right now. But that's, in essence, what did happen.
John, let's face it. I mean, you're no shrinking violent. You're a pretty intimidating guy. And for Danny to stand in there, that was kind of a hard line to walk.
Without this kid doing his job in a professional manner, I would have been in trouble. I mean, it would have been over. I mean, it really would have been over. But the way you did your job, particularly dealing with a person like me, I did what I did because I thought it was the best way for me to do it at that time. But I certainly do appreciate it. And I'm going to tell you, boy, if you ever come to Washington, you look me up. I'm going to make time for you.
I will do that. And it was a pleasure to speak to you back then, Coach. And it's a pleasure to speak to you today. And I'm glad it all worked out.
Thanks so much. And it just shows you when a person does his job in a professional way, that it does reap some benefits. If not for you, it damn sure did for me that time. And if you could have pissed me off, man, I'd have gotten mad. I mean, it would have been curtains for me. But you handled it in a way that I said, I cannot not do this the way you did it. So thanks very much. I appreciate that, Danny.
Thank you, Coach.
Yeah, I get chills every time I hear that story. And the truth is, and again, just so you understand, that's John Thompson, the legendary basketball coach. And the other voice you heard at the end of that was Danny Swartz. Danny Swartz worked on The Last Word with me on Fox Sports, Fox Sports Net. And Danny, as John Thompson told so eloquently, Danny got on the phone with him and said, hey, coach, we really want to have you on the show and we want you on this day. And John Thompson said, yeah, I'm not doing it that day. I can't do it that day. I've got other plans. And as I mentioned, if you know John Thompson, he is a really intimidating man. And when John Thompson says something, it is normally so. But John Thompson made the point repeatedly in that exchange that your guy handled his business in such a professional manner that he stood in and said, hey, coach, listen, I understand where you're coming from. I know that you have to be someplace else. You need to be in Las Vegas. But if I can get you there and you don't miss that commitment and we can still tape the show, is it something that you might be willing to do? And they went back and forth and back and forth. And John Thompson finally said, all right, yes, I will do it. Yes, I will do it if you promise you can get me to this spot at this time and I make my commitment. And it was because he changed that flight. He was not on the ill-fated flight. And, you know, honestly, I didn't know that right after that happened. In fact, some time went by before I actually heard that story, and I absolutely couldn't believe it. Now, it's been 17 years since 9/11, and that's almost an impossible thing for me even to wrap my head around. 17 years. That conversation right there was from 7 years ago, and the two of them had never spoken before. And they spoke on the air the first time. And I said, Coach, you know, you and I are talking about this. I've got the guy that you spoke to that day, Danny Swartz. Would you like to talk to him? He said, hell yes, I'd like to talk to him. So the two of them had a conversation for the first time that day. And John Thompson has told that story before. And I know some of you have heard that, but some of you have not. And I get chills, obviously, every single time I hear that. And I hear that once a year. All right, we'll take a short time out. Your thoughts on that and your reaction to it if you want, or any thoughts you might have about 9/11. We were here when that happened. And I'll never forget that. Chris Harris Jr., Chris, nice to have you back on the program. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's been a few minutes, so it's good to have you back. Let me first start here. You're coming off that win over Seattle, 27-24. I know you're already looking ahead to the Raiders on Sunday, but how good does it feel to come into the facility after starting the year with a nice win?
Yeah. Oh, man, you always want to start the first game at home with a win, and we was able to protect home, and being able to get up on the division. I know we got the Raiders this week, and so to be able to get this win this week, to be up two games, that's going to be huge.
Chris Harris Jr., my guest. Now, you had a huge play on a third down late in the fourth quarter where you sack Russell Wilson, you force a punt. What did you see on that play, and how good did it feel to come up with a big play in a moment like that?
Well, I just wanted to disguise my blitz and not show that I was coming, and I was able to trick him, and I don't think he seen me coming until late, and I was able to still make the play, and you got to make those big plays to be able to clinch games, and it was just my turn.
Hey, Chris, Von Miller was doing Von Miller type things. He had another monster game. Derek Wolfe made some plays. Bradley Roby made some plays. How much does every guy in the defense feed off of every other guy and then get inspired to take their game to the next level?
Yeah. That's just the standard here. If you play defense here at the Denver Broncos, we've had a standard set here for a while, and me and Von been here the longest, so we try to make sure and hold everybody accountable to that standard. And that's by making plays we got to make plays first and be able to do that, and everybody else follows our lead.
Chris Harris Jr., my guest, you mentioned that standard. You know, some of the faces on the defense change, and you know that's part of the life in the NFL. That's just business. But when new guys come in, what is your message to the new guys about the mentality that it takes to be a member of that Broncos defense and the standard you're talking about?
Yeah. That's the first thing we tell them. I mean, as soon as they come in, they feel it. They understand it. And that's how it is. As soon as you walk in our building, you know we're going to play defense here, and we don't accept anything less than being in top five defense. That's what it's been every year, and guys quickly learn that.
Hey, Chris, I'm curious. The season last year did not go on the whole the way you or the team would have liked. So what was your personal mindset in the offseason as you got ready for this year?
Oh, man, I've just been upset all season, just motivated to come back here and make plays. I think last year was my least targeted season. I think I only got targeted around 50 times compared to my past being in the 90s. So it was just a different season. So just being prepared for that and knowing that I'm going to get a couple opportunities to make those plays, to be able to change the game. So it's just a season-long preparation to get ready to be able to change this year and get us back on the road in this division and back to contending for the Super Bowl.
Denver Bronco, Chris Harris Jr. joining us. All right, you just said it, to get back in contention for the Super Bowl. Coming off that season last year, it seemed like there may have been some who felt like the window had closed on the Denver Broncos. What was your reaction when you heard that?
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely think that from the last 2 years, but now we're much younger. We have drafted great this year. We have great rookies that are making a huge impact already, and we're a different team, man. Case Keenum came and he led the offense, and he's going to continue to get better. He knows he didn't play his best, but he's going to continue to get better, and he showed flashes of what he can do.
You know, Chris, like you, Keenum's another guy who was overlooked and undrafted coming out of college. So how much respect do you have for a guy like that who's been grinding it out year after year to get to this point? And what's to say about his resiliency and his mental toughness?
Oh, man, it just shows his fight and hunger. And you can see it in the way he prepares for the game and how he practices. And, you know, he really wants it. And that's what you want from your quarterback. And you see he really wants it. Everybody else going to jump on board and work like he works.
Now, earlier this month, you were inducted into the Kansas Ring of Honor. I know how much being a Jayhawk means to you. What was it like to receive that honor?
Yeah. Oh, I was huge, man. Just to be able to go back home where it started, and the first school that gave me an opportunity. I only had one offer, and so to be able to go there and go on the Ring of Fame was huge. It just gives you more motivation to be able to just continue to chase Hall of Fame and anything else.
Hey, Chris, speaking of motivation, really quickly, I had Ty Montgomery of the Packers on the show last hour. He talked about the birth of his son this summer and how that changed his entire perspective and his motivation. You and your wife had your third daughter recently. You've always been a really motivated person, but you've said that since you started your family, it's increased your motivation even more. How so?
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, you have mouths to feed. You want to make sure that they have a, they grow up in a better situation than you are, than you had, and that you can give them anything that, that they want. With girls, man, I'm like Superman to my girls. So for me to go out there and ball for them is huge.
That's nice. Now, you and your foundation are hosting your Coats for a Cause event next Monday night in Inglewood, Colorado. What is the event all about, and how can people get involved?
Yes. You can go to ChrisHarrisJr.com and buy, purchase your tickets. You'll get 25% off on any any bottle or wine that you purchase. And all the proceeds go to Denver Rescue Home, and Denver Children's Home, and they've been a great organization that we partnered with last year, and being able to close these kids in the winter. These kids are not financially stable at all to be able to have to be able to go get anything for the winter, and it's cold out here. So I just want to be able to provide them with the proper clothing and make sure they're happy.
Good night now!